Behind almost every web page, email address, and podcast is a system that translates addresses understandable by humans to something that can be understood by computers. The system is one of the foundations of the internet, yet its origin was in a handmade list that was placed on a single computer. Unbeknownst to the creators of the system, it would eventually affect the fortunes of entire countries. Learn more about the domain name system, how it originated, and how it works on this episode of Everything Everywhere Daily. This episode is sponsored by Newspapers.com, your passport to untold stories and hidden histories. As the largest online newspaper archive, Newspapers.com offers an incredible journey through time, with papers dating back to 1690. Imagine exploring the news, events, and everyday moments that shape the history of the world around us. Newspapers.com puts over 900 million pages at your fingertips, offering a front row seat to the past. With papers from the United States, United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, and beyond, Newspapers.com lets you walk the streets of history, whether it's London during the Blitz, New York during Prohibition, or Sydney during the construction of the Harbor Bridge. For listeners of today's episode, Newspapers.com is extending a special offer. Use the code EverythingEverywhere and enjoy a 20% discount on a subscription. That's EverythingEverywhere at Newspapers.com. It's the perfect way to unlock the world of history. This episode is sponsored by Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond Bourbon. I recently had the chance to try Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond, and I can attest to its exceptional aromas with hints of caramel and vanilla intertwining with its oakiness, which provide a well-rounded flavor profile. Taking a sip is akin to experiencing a piece of bourbon history firsthand. Heaven Hill Distillery may be America's most quintessential bourbon distillery. Established in 1935 after the end of Prohibition, the distillery was established by the Shapira family and has remained a family-owned distillery to this day. In 1897, Congress passed the Bottled in Bond Act, which set forth strict rules for any bourbon labeled Bottled in Bond. Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon goes beyond the stringent requirements of the law by aging its bourbon for 7 years, not four. The end result is a gold medal-winning bourbon that truly stands out. Available nationally, look for a bottle at your local store. Heaven Hill, Bottled in Bond. Heaven Hill reminds you, think wisely, drink wisely. Even if you don't know what the domain name system is, you probably use it every day, even if you don't realize it. Every time you go to a website or send an email, you're using the domain name system. A domain name is what you type into a browser or is part of an email address. For example, my website has the domain name of everything-everywhere.com. Millions of different domain names have been registered by people, companies, governments, and organizations all around the world. To understand how the domain name system works, you need to understand the system underneath it, the Internet Protocol. The way telephone systems originally worked is that each telephone call would result in a direct connection between the two phones in the call. To achieve this, there were massive switches that would create a literal electrical connection between the phones so the parties could talk to each other. While the system worked well for point-to-point voice communication, it was not ideal for data. The first computer networks were just private networks that often connected a limited number of computers using proprietary protocols. Computers in diverse locations couldn't talk to each other, both because they weren't connected and because they didn't use the same protocol. An idea for a generalized system to network computers was proposed by the Advanced Research Projects Agency, or ARPA, of the United States Department of Defense. The proposed network would use a packet delivery system. In a packet delivery system, information is broken up into small packets of data. These small packets are then sent individually, routed through various intermediate computers, and then reassembled on the recipient computer. The networking system developed for the ARPA network, which was known as ARPANET, was known as TCP/IP, which stands for Transmission Control Protocol/Internet Protocol. Under this protocol, each computer on the network had a unique numeric address. When a data packet is sent from a computer, it's sent to the recipient computer via intermediate computers called routers. This system worked well quite a while, and it was very robust and fault-tolerant. However, there was a problem. In order to communicate with another computer, you needed to know its IP address. This was extremely confusing and difficult to know the address of every computer on the network. The solution was very similar to the solution used by the telephone system. If you needed to make a phone call to someone whose number that you didn't know, you used a directory, usually a phone book. And for those of you too young to remember a phone book, everybody would get a book for their local area with everybody's name, address, and phone number in it. So you would look up someone's name and find out their phone number so you could call them. The solution for ARPANET was the equivalent of a phone book for computers. The Stanford Research Institute kept a text file of all the computers on the ARPANET network with their IP addresses, and they updated this list by hand. The file, which was literally called hosts.txt, would then be sent to various computers on the network so everyone would have a copy of the directory. The first directory, called the Assigned Numbers List, was created by Elizabeth Feinler, a data scientist at Stanford. It was Feinler and her team that developed the idea of domains. She believed in associating computers with the type of organization that they were located in. At the time, this would have mostly been done with educational institutions, government agencies, and research organizations. So, for example, all educational institutions would be under the .edu domain, and Stanford would be stanford.edu. This system was fine so long as the number of computers on the network was limited. However, as the network expanded, keeping a list and manually sending it out to everyone on the network became extremely inefficient. By 1983, the system had started to become untenable. Proposals for a solution to the problem were submitted to Paul Makapetras, a researcher at the University of Southern California. He actually rejected all of those that were submitted and ended up going with his own solution, which he dubbed the Domain Name System. The Domain Name System is a hierarchical system. At the very top is what's called the root zone. If you remember my episode on the 7 people who control the internet, these people have the power to reset the root zone servers. Below are what are known as top-level domains. Some of these are ones that you're familiar with, such as .com, .net, .org, .co, .uk, and many others. Each top-level domain points to a second-level domain registered underneath it and to the computers that host those domains. In my example, everything-everywhere is a second-level domain under the top-level .com domain. The very first top-level domain is one that you probably haven't heard of before, .arpa. The .arpa top-level domain still exists, but it's only used for high-level network management, not for websites. Second-level domains can then register information about computers under their domain. For example, if you visit Wikipedia in English, you will go to en.wikipedia.org. Wikipedia has many subdomains for each language that's covered by Wikipedia. Early in the days of the internet, almost every website had a subdomain that started with www, standing for the World Wide Web. This was to distinguish their web server from their email or gopher servers. This convention has become rather dated, but you can still use www on most domains and it will take you to a page on the root domain. The hierarchical nature of the domain name system primarily has to do with what domain servers have authoritative control over each domain name. Despite being hierarchical, each of the domain servers replicates itself with other domain name servers. So, if you make a change to a domain name, it can sometimes take hours for the change to replicate across most domain name servers. On your computer or smartphone, if you go into your network settings, you will see what domain name server, or DNS, it is pointing to. When you visit a website for the first time, your computer will query your domain name server to find out what the IP address is of the domain that you're trying to reach. This is the one computer you can't really use a domain name to reference because you need a domain name server to resolve the domain name server. You have to use an IP address. Several large companies run public domain name servers with easy-to-remember IP addresses. For example, Cloudflare has 1.1.1.1. Google has 8.8.8.8, and a company called Quad9 runs 9.9.9.9. There are currently over 1,500 top-level domains, even though most of us are only familiar with a few of them. When the domain system started, there were only a few top-level domains, those being .edu, .org, .net, etc. However, over time, the number of top-level domains has expanded dramatically. At first, the creation of a .com domain was actually controversial because it was thought that the internet should be free of commercial influence, which today actually seems rather cute. One of the things that was done early on was reserving two-letter top-level domains for individual countries. These domains corresponded to the two-letter codes used by the International Standard Organization's 3166-1 Alpha 2 standard. Examples of this would be .us for the United States, .ca for Canada, .uk for the United Kingdom, .au for Australia, and .nz, or NZ, for New Zealand. In the United States, the .us domain is reserved for government use. Each state has its own two-letter domain reserved under the U.S. domain. It is not for commercial use. In the UK, however, co.uk is a very popular top-level domain for commercial use. Each country can set its own policies for what they do with their top-level domain. And this is where it gets interesting, because when top-level domains were issued to all the countries, they were issued to all the countries. Not just big countries, but tiny countries as well. And some of them weren't even technically countries. One of these countries that got a domain name was Tokelau. Tokelau has only about 1,500 people, and it's in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. You can't even fly there. You can only get there via a 24-hour boat ride. However, they have the top-level domain name .tk. They licensed the domain name to a company, which in turn offered people the chance to register domains under the .tk domain for free. Tokelau made millions, and it became the preferred domain name for spammers and scammers who wanted to use something for free. Other countries got lucky and wound up with top-level domain names that had value. The Federated States of Micronesia was assigned the top-level domain name of .fm. And they too have made millions by licensing their .fm domain to radio stations around the world. Likewise, Armenia was assigned .am, and they have also licensed their domain to radio stations, but with much less success. The tiny nation of Nauru was assigned .nu, which has been sold because it can be pronounced the same as new. Perhaps the biggest winner may have been Tuvalu, a tiny country with only 10,000 people, which lucked out with its .tv domain name. Their government currently gets 8% of all its revenue from licensing the .tv domain name. Sometimes events have to transpire to make a top-level domain name valuable. For years, the top-level domain for the British territory of Anguilla had very little value. However, in the last few years, their domain of .ai has found itself in high demand with artificial intelligence startups. Having a domain name can be quite valuable. Registering a domain name can cost anywhere from a few dollars to a few hundred dollars a month. However, extremely coveted domains can sell for an exorbitant amount of money. The record sale of a domain name was $30 million for voice.com, which sold in 2019. Despite the age of the domain name system, advances and improvements are still being made. One of the biggest recent improvements has been encrypted domain name server requests. Until relatively recently, even if you visited a secure website, the contents of the web page may have been secure, but the domain of the website you visited was not. The domain name system is a core component of the internet today. Whether you know it or not, you use it multiple times a day, including accessing this very podcast. Today, the domain name system keeps track of millions of computers connected to the internet all around the world. And it all started with a woman in Palo Alto, California, who kept track of every computer on the internet by hand. The executive producer of Everything Everywhere Daily is Charles Daniel. The associate producers are Peter Bennett and Cameron Kiefer. Today's review comes from listener W222333444 on Apple Podcasts in the United States. They write, "Great podcast. I listen to this podcast every day, and I'm not disappointed. Me and my dad spend countless hours on my hockey road trips listening to this. Keep up the great work, Gary. Can we get an episode on the transatlantic slave trade route?" Thanks, W222333444. I've touched on the transatlantic slave trade in several episodes, but an entire episode on the topic is certainly possible. It's a very big subject, so trying to condense it down to an episode of this podcast will require a bit of thought and work. Remember, if you leave a review or send me a Boostagram, you too can have it read on the show.